Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always great catching up with you at the end of the week. Try to figure out what's been going on in this crazy world of ours during the preceding 7 days. A lot to talk about. In fact, shortly, a good friend and immigration activist from Indiana, Cherie Calabro, will be joining me. I expect Steve Salvo from Ohio will also be joining us a bit later on. And let's start off by reminding all of you who I am. I am Michael Cutler, obviously. I was a senior special agent with the Immigration and Naturalization Service for some 30 years. And ever since the attacks of 9/11, I have decided to take my show on the road, as the saying goes, and so here I am. But rather than dwell too long on what I've done in the past, being more focused on what's going on in the present, if you want to find out more about me, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, I am a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, C-A-P-S, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. And although I often tease them about shake and bake that they wind up with between the earthquakes and the fires, and certainly it's no laughing matter. In fact, there are terrible fires devastating parts of California right now. Considering the weather in New York today, I think I'd rather be in Santa Barbara, almost like W.C. Fields would rather be in Philadelphia. But anyway, to my friends in California, I am pleased to be working with CAPS. I've been with them for a bunch of years. They do great work. And in fact, they made my trip to the rally in Washington this past Monday possible. The Black American Leadership Alliance conducted a rally, the D.C. March for Jobs. I was one of many speakers who was in attendance. Leah Duran, the director of the program, did a great job putting the event together. We had well over 3,000 participants. I wish we had had 30,000 or perhaps 300,000. But for those of you listening who attended, I thank you. For those of you who did not attend, please get involved, folks. You know, we are at crossroads today. It is vital that the politicians hear from us. If this is supposed to be a government by the people, of the people, and for the people, then the way that we do this is by participating in the democratic process. And so that is why we were there. With all the talk about how we've got to get the illegals out of the shadows and provide opportunities for them, what seems to be missing from the conversation, and certainly missing from comprehensive immigration reform, is any effort to make certain that our immigration laws live up to their requirement of protecting the lives and jobs of Americans. That is what government of the people is supposed to do. Sadly, it has not been. In fact, I would go further and say tragically, it has not. It is because of the failures of our government, and this goes back decades, and it's both political parties. Nobody gets a pass from me, not on this issue. Look, 9/11 could not have happened if the lessons had been learned from the terrorist attacks that were carried out in 1993. And today, comprehensive immigration reform utterly ignores the findings and the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Pardon me, I seem to have picked up a frog in my throat. Kermit has set up residence. Maybe I should charge him rent. We really have got to be smart about what we're doing. Comprehensive immigration reform is a betrayal of America, Americans, and everything that our government is supposed to stand for. I see that we have a caller. I'm going to guess it's my friend Cherie. Let's see. Cherie, is that you?
Yes, it's
Hi,
me.
Hi, Cherie. Happy Friday, young lady. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, it was great to see you in Washington on Monday. Why don't you start out telling me a little bit, how did you get there? Who did you come there with? How did that event look to you through your eyes?
Well, I was very encouraged by it. I was one of the first people to sign up for the bus trip from Indiana, so I got to be the bus captain, which was a real challenging experience. But we brought a bus full of Hoosiers from all over the state, and we had a great time coming out there and made a lot of new friends. And I just thank God for the Tea Party, because they really supported us on this issue. And I thought we had a great lineup of speakers when we were there on a very hot day. And it was a really rough march when the temperature was at least 95 degrees and the heat index was over, well over 100. But we did it, and most everyone stayed under the shade trees and listened to the speakers and renewed old friendships, and it was a really excellent day. Disappointed, though, that more of our politicians don't seem to be paying attention, and that the media seems to be just not interested.
How about missing in action?
Yeah, it seems odd.
And, you know,
to me
it's worse than that. You know, we talked about this before the program. I was on Fox News a couple of times this week. And, in fact, during one of my appearances on Neil Cavuto's program, Stuart Varney filling in for Neil, we got into a conversation, and I had said that if they enact comprehensive immigration reform, that what this would mean is that aliens who are here illegally would be able to get lawful status. Because of that, unscrupulous employers who hired them, not because they have special talent or skill. The only thing exceptional about illegal aliens is that they work for exceptionally low wages under dangerous conditions most times, would fire them most likely. And they would then move from those jobs and then become competitors for Americans and lawful immigrants for jobs that are in short supply right now. But believe it or not, there were a couple of news organizations that attempted to twist my words and claim that what I really meant was that I didn't like comprehensive reform because it would prevent aliens from being exploited. Could you imagine anything more outrageous than that?
No, because I've heard you talk about the reasons you got involved in this in the first place and about
right.
some of the deplorable conditions that illegals have to work in.
In fact, you and I were at the state capitol in Indiana when both times when they did, SB 570 and then 590 did get passed during the debate over 570. If you remember, I spoke about the exploitive conditions, the horrific conditions, that an illegal alien who was provided with an opportunity to speak came running up to me afterwards and thanked me. He was all upset, and he said, "Mr. Cutler, thank you. You're the first American who talks about how terribly we're exploited and mistreated." So it really infuriates me that news organizations who really aren't reporting the news but are really reporting propaganda would take what I said out of context, twist it around, and say, well, Mike Cutler doesn't want comprehensive reform to pass because they could no longer exploit illegal aliens. Absolutely infuriating. And then I got an email from somebody who saw the article and took it for gospel. When I tried to explain what was going on, I got an even nastier email as a follow-up, and so I said, well, another lost American. You know, I have to tell you, it amazes me that so many news organizations, Cherie, fail to live up to their responsibilities under the First Amendment. And I was thinking about this yesterday. You know the age-old argument, is the pen mightier than the sword?
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about this. If I took my gun out and waved it around without, you know, with abandon, that kind of brandishing of a weapon would get you in jail. And I agree with that. But when reporters whip out their pen or their keyboard and brandish it the same way, nothing usually happens. And there needs to be accountability when the reporters upon whom our democracy rests abuse their authority and twist the truth like a pretzel. It's astonishing. And that's really what I find disturbing. And, you know, I've often asked people when I participate in panel discussions, and in fact, the weekend that I went to Washington, that Saturday before, I was in Prescott, Arizona. So if I looked a bit out of it when I saw you on Monday, It's because I was sleeping on airplanes and airport terminals. I was grabbing an hour here and 45 minutes there. I was kind of a zombie. But what's astonishing to me, if you stop and think about it, is that very few people really get to see a newsworthy event live and in person. If I'm in front of a room of a couple of hundred people and ask them, how many of you folks have ever seen an event that wound up on the evening news, that wound up on the front page of a newspaper? Very few hands generally go up unless we're dealing with folks who are in the military or government service or doing something unusual. But the average American does not get to see newsworthy events. They go from home to office, office to store, maybe to the playground and back again, and that's the way we live our lives. So people are apprised of what is happening, or are supposed to be apprised of what's happening, by the journalists, whether it's the print media, the radio, or the television reporters. So when those folks don't do their job, Americans don't know what's going on. And that's something that we need to be mindful of. There is a responsibility that journalists have. And what I found really interesting is that this piece of garbage, Jokhart Tsarnaev, the surviving alleged bomber of the Boston Marathon, wound up with his mug splattered across Rolling Stone magazine. And it was infuriating. And a bunch of stores said, you know what? If you could do something as disgusting as put him on the cover as though he were a rock star, we will no longer allow you to sell your publication in our stores.
Good for them.
And let me tell you what, we need to do the same thing. We need to do the same thing. When we can find that the media is twisting the truth, not reporting accurately, the Zimmerman case, terrible thing happened all the way around. There's no winners here. Let me tell you, it was a tragedy for two families. It was a tragedy for America. I think that Mr. Zimmerman was foolish for getting out of the vehicle. The jury has spoken. He has been acquitted. But what infuriated and disturbed me was that NBC News, apparently, edited the tape recording of the conversation that Mr. Zimmerman had with the police. And what they did was to paint a picture of him stopping the guy that he wound up shooting because he was black. What they left out was the operator asking him, can you describe the person you're following, whereupon he said he's black and wearing a hoodie. When you pull out the question, it gives a very different context to what he supposedly said.
And well, that's almost a great analogy.
Am I right?
That's a great analogy. Yeah, that's a great analogy. It's exactly the same thing they do to people in our movement. They have a template.
That's right.
They have a way they want to portray us. It doesn't matter what they see. It doesn't matter what the truth is. They're still going to stick with their propaganda.
So here's what we need to do, folks, and I've said this right along. You need to reach out to the news organizations. When they pull that kind of stuff, you tell them in no uncertain terms, I am not going to watch your programming any longer. Not only that, but I'm going to reach out to the people who have sponsorship for programs on your network. And I'm going to tell them that if they continue to advertise on your network, if they continue to advertise in your newspaper, I will boycott those products and I will encourage my neighbors to boycott the product. So if some company is selling, bathroom cleanser or whatever, I'm not going to buy the product because they're advertising on a network that spews propaganda and not news. Could you imagine if enough Americans called up the various corporations and said, you know, this news organization of that network is guilty of the following. If you continue to advertise with them, we're not going to buy your product. Not only won't you gain customers, you're going to lose customers. We need to turn the heat up on these people just the way they're doing with Rolling Stone magazine. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a great idea. It's the same way with our politicians, too. I mean,
yes,
we may not have a lot of authority as an individual, but together, if we raise our voices, we can have a great impact.
Let me tell you, I lived through Hurricane Sandy, and it started with that first drop of rain, and look at the devastation it wrought. We could do the same devastation to the knuckleheads who are destroying this country, and they really are. And this isn't xenophobia. I am tired of the nonsense of. And you know, I got to tell you, I think that the folks in our side of the argument, who want the laws enforced, who want the border secured, gave up a strategic advantage by allowing us, those of us who want enforcement, to be defined as being anti-immigrant. We need to go on the record. Enforcement of the immigration laws honors immigrants. It doesn't go against them. There is a legal process by which this country admits more than a million legal aliens every single year. They are given green cards. They are placed immediately on the pathway to United States citizenship. There is a process. When Chuck Schumer lies through his teeth, and Chuck, if you're listening, I am calling you out. I will tell you to your face, you're a liar and you know better. This isn't you being stupid. It's you being unscrupulous. Because you know darn well that there is a lawful way for aliens to immigrate to the United States. All they have to do is make an application for a visa based on a familial relationship, based on a skill set, or a needed capability, and you can come to the United States. We admit refugees. We admit all sorts of folks and enable them to become this incredible tapestry that is America. My own mother came here that way. My dad's parents came here legally at the turn of the last century. We admit more immigrants into the United States each and every year than the rest of the world combined. So when we hear this fantasy that, oh my gosh, these people do what they do because there's no legal way of coming here, that's nonsense. The immigration laws are designed to do two things: protect innocent lives and the jobs of Americans. The laws are supposed to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or aliens who have mental illness issues and are violent or are sex offenders. It's supposed to keep out murderers and bank robbers, gang members, rapists, the whole list of criminal activities that will render you deportable or excludable. It's also supposed to keep out spies and terrorists and human rights violators and war criminals. And yes, also aliens who would become public charges or take a job that an American desperately needs, because in so doing, not only does the American worker stand to lose his or her job, but those who don't lose their jobs will likely find that wages will have decreased and working conditions will have been degraded, because there's more competition offered by those folks who are willing to settle for lower wages under worse conditions with fewer benefits. So this is anti-American. It's anti-labor. This isn't a conservative issue. It's not a liberal issue. These are American issues. So when the other side can say, well, you're anti-immigrant, that's a lot of bunk, and we need to call them out on it. There is a legal way to come here. It's the way that so many millions of immigrants have come to America over the past two centuries and have built this country. Am I getting
funny.
This wrong, Cherie?
No, but what's funny is when the Gang of Eight talks about this like it's something new, they're going to have to get in line, they're going to have to learn English, and they're going to have to pass the citizenship test. All those are already required by the process to immigrate here legally. They aren't doing anything new. There's not much new in this bill at all.
There is new. It would make it harder to prosecute aliens or people who are involved with producing counterfeit documents. Which is remarkable when you realize that the 9/11 Commission talked about how the production of counterfeit documents aided and abetted the terrorists. Now, under the new law, this is amazing, folks, instead of being found guilty of producing documents, you have to have produced at least three documents. You have to have at least lied three separate times, unless you're a terrorist. Now, that may sound good, but let me give you the inside scoop on what that means. I was part of the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force for the last 10 years of my 30-year career. For 4 years prior to that, I was the first immigration agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA. In both of those assignments, I had a desk at DEA. I also, when I became a senior agent, had a desk at the FBI and ATF and worked closely with other agencies, including the U.S. Marshal Service, IRS, Secret Service, State Department, New York State Police, New York City Police, and foreign governments, including Israel, Canada, Great Britain, and Japan. I had taken the scenic tour. Now, there are times when an individual who we have intelligence on is believed to be a terrorist is found to have committed visa fraud or immigration benefit fraud. They lied on their applications. In fact, my very first congressional hearing was on May 20th, 1997, and that was the focus of the hearing, visa fraud and benefit fraud, because of the two terrorist attacks of 93. This guy Kansi, a Pakistani who shoots up the CIA after he lies on his applications for political asylum. Then a month later, the World Trade Center attack. Again, another guy who lied on his application for political asylum, Ramzi Youssef, who got political asylum. Mahmoud Abu Alima got agricultural amnesty a la Chuck Schumer's special agricultural worker program, even though the only thing this guy ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. So we saw where fraud was an issue. Now, there are times when it's difficult to prove someone's a terrorist, even though you have solid information, or perhaps you don't want to divulge that you know that the guy is a terrorist because it would tip off his cohorts or might expose the technology or the methods behind the discoveries as to his involvement in terrorism. So if you could arrest somebody like that and, let's say, charge them with visa fraud, which is a very common thing to do, and it's easy. You have an application. The question is, have you ever been arrested? He says no. You have an arrest record. You can now indict him. So you don't want to let him know that you know that he's a terrorist. You go after him for lying. If comprehensive reform passes, it would have to be multiple lies, multiple times, unless you're willing to say, yeah, you're a terrorist. Well, that basically strips bare any effort you may have had for good purposes to conceal your understanding of what this character is truly up to. Why in the world would members of Congress, for any political purpose, take away an important tool in the counterterrorism arsenal is a question that we the people must not just ask, but demand answers to. If you had a nanny or somebody, a babysitter, watching your child, and the person put your child at risk, you would demand to know why, and you would fire the person. You know, imagine you had a two-year-old kid, and this babysitter let the kid go loose in the park and went off and had lunch with a friend and hoped to find the child later on. You'd go crazy and say, oh, my God, you endangered my child's safety. Why did you do it? Well, you drove the car at 80 miles an hour when the police stopped you, and my kid was in the back seat, not even wearing a seatbelt. Why did you do it? And they would probably be prosecuted for it. So we would demand an explanation, and we would take action. Well, we should do the same thing here. The 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony, by the way, was so clear that immigration fraud and visa fraud were the method of choice for terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves here, hide in plain sight. We, the people, should demand an explanation and find out which nitwit who's passing himself off as a representative of American citizens would create a situation that endangers our safety and America's national security. Is that an unreasonable position, do you think?
No. But it's interesting, isn't it, how people like Janet Napolitano do a terrible job and then they land on their feet. They get better paying jobs than they had before. It's like not only do they go unpunished, but they seem to be rewarded for their ineptitude.
Well, and that's why I don't refer to these eight miscreants as the Gang of Eight. I call them what I think they are, the eight gangsters. Because to me, this is really and truly what they are. They are conducting themselves in a way that's outside the law and extremely dangerous. That's really the problem. You know, it's interesting. Napolitano said, right, that there was no spillover violence. In fact, I've written articles for Fox News Latino. There's no spillover violence. It's only in Mexico. It's not here. Excuse me. The border is secure. Everything is wonderful. Well, now here's what's remarkable. I sent you the link. I don't know if you've had the chance to see it yet. But,
not yet.
Okay. And it's on my website, michaelcutler.net. There's a piece of work by the name of Miguel Angel Trevino Morales, who was arrested by Mexican authorities. The Mexican Navy arrested this guy in Mexico because he is alleged to be the leader of Los Zetas. Los Zetas is probably the most bloodthirsty of all of the drug cartels in Mexico. These are individuals who started out as members of elite military and law enforcement units who went to the dark side. They initially were working as the enforcers for the Gulf cartel and then decided, you know what, why should we work for them? We could supplant them. They've been involved with beheadings. This guy, in fact, Trevino, was purportedly taking his victims, competitors, people that wouldn't cooperate and so forth, and dropping them into boiling oil. He is responsible, it is believed and alleged, for hundreds of deaths, if not thousands of deaths, including illegal aliens who refused to carry narcotics on their bodies when they smuggled them into the United States. He would summarily kill them. That's the kind of individual we're looking at. Now, the reason I'm telling you about Trevino is because he was not only wanted for these trafficking allegations and crimes and murder and so forth in Mexico, but inside the United States. So I doubt that Janet Napolitano, this wonderful, hot, steamy Friday evening, is listening to my program, but in the off chance that Nappy is listening, I would love to know how she could have said, A, the border is secure, and B, there's no spillover violence, when the Department of Justice has indicted this guy for committing violent crimes inside the United States. A small detail that I think she seemed to have overlooked, don't you think?
Exactly.
You know, we keep hearing this business about whether or not there's spillover violence, whether or not the border is secure. Why don't they look at the price of drugs in the United States, cocaine and heroin? Those rat poisons come into the United States from outside the United States. They're not produced here. They are smuggled into the United States. So if somebody has heroin or cocaine in their possession, it is a product that had been smuggled in. If the border was secure, that garbage could not be getting into the United States. That would mean classic economics takeover. The price should skyrocket if the border was secure. Well, guess what, folks? The price hasn't gone up at all. If the price hasn't gone up, and the demand has remained constant, if not having increased, and I've seen studies that show that the demand for heroin has gone up, actually. So here's the obvious question. How could the border be secure? Because if it were, this garbage wouldn't be getting in, or at least it certainly would be coming in much lower quantities, and that's not happening. So it must be wonderful to be able to go on TV and radio and say, yes, everything is terrific. It's the job I've been paid to do, and I'm here to tell you I'm doing a fabulous job. And nobody says, wait a minute, why are the drugs still coming into America? Why hasn't the price gone up? Why are they still available? Little detail.
Well, you know what I wonder? Mexico's economy is improving. They have an unemployment rate of about 4% as compared to ours, which is around 8%. So if that's the case, do they really have to come here for jobs? And who is coming here? Would it be the people that could not get in legally because they have criminal records? I mean,
well, that's certainly a very big component of it. And by the way, that 7 or 8% figure, you and I both know, is kind of crazy, and I'll tell you why. It does not include millions of Americans who have given up looking for work and who've run out of unemployment benefits. We have never had more unemployed Americans than right now. Look at what happened to Detroit. It has gone belly up. We've exported the jobs, we've exported, and we import foreign workers. This does not do well for America. You know, one of the reasons, see, Mexico has a few reasons for wanting their people to come here, because it's the Mexican government that screams the loudest about letting their people come to the United States. Now, why are they screaming so loudly? Because they have a couple of benefits to this deal. Number one, it's the remittances, well over $20 billion a year. And that's the traceable money. What I mean by traceable, if some guy buys an appliance and stuffs it with money, a refrigerator or a washing machine or a sofa, furniture, that goes on all the time, by the way, folks, especially the drug traffickers, because they don't want people to be aware of how much money they're moving. But $20 billion plus legal money, or at least money that's visible money, is moving from the United States to Mexico. A couple of years ago, the World Bank, an arm of the United Nations, reported that roughly 50% of all of the money that flows from the first world to the third world is money that is taken right out of America's economy. We're being looted. That's what this is like. A brick has been thrown through the window, and we're being looted. We're being looted, and our own government is complicit in the looting. Think about that. So number one, the Mexican government loves the fact that they get a cash infusion every day from their illegal aliens who are exploited in our country, and they could care less what the conditions that they work are like as long as they get the money. They're also getting another benefit. Most of the people who come to do the hard manual labor are young, able-bodied men. You don't get some old codger like me in his 60s usually doing the hard, physically demanding work. That's why it's estimated that over 90% of all illegal aliens in the United States, if they ran the border, that kind of thing, are under the age of 35. So if you wonder why the DREAM Act was supposed to cover aliens up to 35 and now it's 31 that the president is doing with his deferred action business, 31, because it would encompass almost, you know, all of the illegal aliens in the United States. These numbers aren't picked at random. And then the great lie is told that this is all about the children. Well, I got to tell you, I'm a compassionate guy. And if we had an illegal alien valedictorian in a high school who could come into immigration with a school transcript and verification that, in fact, he's been in attendance in that school for the last 8 years, meaning that he or she got here when they were 8 years old and says, you know, I want to stay. I could even see maybe working with those children and helping them. That's not what they're doing. This is just an attempt to legalize as many aliens as possible. And whether or not comprehensive reform passes doesn't matter, really. Well, I mean, it does. But in terms of attaining the goal of the bums on both sides of the aisle, many aliens have run the border anticipating that they will be given lawful status if they can make it here. As I described it when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee this past March 20th, the president, in making that announcement, fired the starter's pistol. And for millions of aspiring illegal aliens around the world, not just Mexico, our border is the finish line to the race. So look at what's happening. Mexico exports its poverty, it imports American dollars, and it also exports the potential for insurrection by the young, able-bodied men who, if they couldn't come here and work and be kept busy, would be in Mexico demanding real change. Maybe their unemployment rate is doing better. I'm not sure, Cherie, but let me tell you, what's really happening, too, I think, is that they're probably doctoring their numbers as well as we're doctoring our numbers. It's about the mushroom treatment, you know, keeping us in the dark and feeding us a lot of fertilizer. In the government, we call that the mushroom treatment. That works, doesn't it? So, you know, and I remember I was on with Neil Cavuto one day, and I love doing Neil's program. And he said to me, Mike, you know, it would seem that maybe, you know, we're not getting so many illegals. The arrest statistics are down. And I said, look, Neil, look at it this way. Trying to figure out how many illegal aliens are present in the United States purely by looking at arrest statistics is a bit like taking attendance and asking people not present to raise their hand. We have, and we don't know what percentage of the illegal aliens being missed by the Border Patrol. I think Steve Salvi is about to join us. You know, Steve was with us also in Washington. Let me check and see if this is Steve.
Yeah, I got to meet Steve while I was there.
You did? Isn't he a great guy?
Yeah, we marched together. We're Facebook friends, and now we're real friends.
Well, that sounds great. Let me see if I can get him up here. Steve Salvi. Hello, Steve. Let me see if I can get him. Steve Salvi, is that you? This isn't working. I don't know.
I keep hearing that I'm muted and unmuted.
Oh, is that right? Maybe that's what I did then. All right. Steve Salvi, is that you?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me now?
I feel like we're doing that cell phone commercial. Happy Friday, Steve. Thank you for joining
exactly.
us. Cherie Calabro is on the line with us.
Hi, Cherie. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Steve.
You guys recovered from the trip?
Sort of.
Kind of, sort of. I'm still running my tail ragged, and of course the New York weather isn't helping things any.
Right.
I think somebody needs to pay the weather bill.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's been hot here in Ohio, too, and not only hot as in the weather, but I've also attended two so-called pro-amnesty immigration panels this week, in addition to going to D.C., so it's been a very busy week, and I've heard a lot of nonsense this week.
So the thermometer's been hot, and you've been hot under the collar. Is that a fair statement?
You know, exactly, and the problem is you hear so many people saying so many unreasonable things, including immigration attorneys and community activists, and unfortunately, you know, some of those people are from the black community who really are doing a disservice to the black community by supporting amnesty. And, you know, as you know, we were all at this march on Monday in support of jobs for American workers, and we really don't want them to be displaced by this. You know, Americans are already being displaced by past amnesties and the every day in which, you know, thousands of illegal aliens cross their borders and take jobs away from American citizens. And that's, you know, that's a fact.
And in some cases, take lives also. You know, look, I want to be clear because sometimes people get into these statements that kind of go overboard. Illegal aliens who run the border, who have no criminal histories, you know, and some people get so angry, say, oh, they're all criminals. Well, they are committing a violation of law. And unlike what O'Reilly had to say the other day, well, it's not a crime to run the border. It is. And in fact, if it's an alien who's been previously deported, it's a felony to run the border. So the Border Patrol agent witnessing people running the border don't know whether or not they're witnessing a felony until they really know who they're looking at. Which, by the way, is why it's remarkable when DHS, Janet Napolitano, and the folks at DHS, the agency I've come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender, are being told, well, don't arrest somebody unless they're criminals. Well, how do you know unless you stop them, fingerprint them, and question them?
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned this, Mike, because I just had this very argument with an immigration lawyer yesterday, and that was after the fact when one of these immigration panel immigration attorneys said, you know, coming into the U.S. illegally is really nothing more severe than, like, getting a parking ticket. And which just infuriated me. And then I spoke to another immigration lawyer after that, and he says, because I told him, I said, well, you know, what wasn't mentioned is if, you know, when you come in for the second time, it's a felony. And
yep.
and he says, no. So we argue that point as well. But
you can refer them to a section of law that I am proud to tell you I had a voice in helping then-Senator Al D'Amato to create. And it's the Aggravated Felon Reentry Law. Title 8,
okay.
United States Code, Section 1326. And I believe it's B.
Okay.
That says that if you are an alien who has been deported because of criminal history, we're talking about drug dealers,
right,
rapists, murderers, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The maximum penalty for that crime is 20 years in jail. Now, if you equate a parking ticket with a 20-year jail sentence, I'd like to know what you're parking and where you're parking it.
Yeah, and I have to look up because I said, well, you know, cite me the code number, which is, I don't know what that is, but it's INA 240A. And I think what he's referring to is sort of a loophole that might exist. And as an immigration lawyer, he works with his clients to avoid that, which is, if this is true, I'd like to know that because, you know, it's very possible aliens are avoiding inappropriately felony charges.
The immigration law has administrative as well as criminal provisions. And if you look at the Title 8 of the United States Code, under the criminal provisions, so it's Title 8, United States Code, Section 1326, and I believe it's parenthesis small b. But definitely part of 26. Now, the other section of law, folks, I don't want to turn this into a law lecture, but take out your crayons. You may find this helpful, and not only in debate, but for yourself, so that you understand why it is so critically important that we push back against this legislative betrayal known as comprehensive immigration reform. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. Because that enumerates the categories of aliens who are supposed to be kept out of the United States, including aliens with dangerous diseases, mental illness, and are violent, sex offenders, criminals, spies, human rights violators, war criminals, terrorists, and aliens who, by working in the country, would provide unfair, illegal competition for American workers, would drive down the wages of American workers, and also aliens who would become public charges. These are not insignificant given the era in which we live, the war on drugs, the war on terror, the economic disaster that befell America in large measure because of Alan Greenspan's subprime mortgages. By the way, in 2005, he stood before the Federal Reserve Bank and bragged about how he was the guy that came up with this tremendous instrument, the subprime mortgages, where they could spread the risk around, you know, so that way we could provide housing to these people. We're talking about people who aren't supposed to be here. And it's remarkable that in most countries, illegal aliens aren't allowed to buy property. And here you've got, at the time, the director of the Federal Reserve Bank arranging mortgages for people who were illegally present in the country. Now, you know what this does also? If you're a bank and you find out that some guy's an illegal alien, that might mean that the guy might default on the mortgage if you deported him. So now the bank has a vested interest in making certain that we don't deport these people.
Right.
See, everybody makes out on this deal except you, me, and our fellow Americans. We're the ones who are getting shafted. Everyone else is being taken care of. Do you know that comprehensive reform in 07, and I'm going to imagine it's the same now, had provisions whereby the federal government would pay for the legal fees for the attorneys who would help the illegal aliens attain lawful status?
Well, they're trying to do that now. There's a push for that now.
Yep, and so what I'm saying is, you and I pay for our accountant to file our taxes. Lawful immigrants have to pay for their attorneys. Illegal aliens get a totally free ride.
Right.
And when they tell us they're going to go on the back of the line, my question is, the back of the line for what? Most illegal aliens who run the border do not have visions of U.S. citizenship dancing in their heads. What they have dancing in their heads is American dollars that they can send back home. That line, the line to where they get employment authorization, is only a couple of days long. Citizenship is irrelevant to so many of them. But it's, again, one of those false statements. So when people like Rubio or Schumer decide to get in front of the camera and lie, which is any time they're in front of a camera, it seems. And in fact, you know, we all have lie detectors in our homes. They're called television sets. If you can see these characters' lips moving, you know they're lying. It's astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing. And it's America's minorities, including Latinos and blacks, who are suffering the worst unemployment and the worst violence from the transnational criminals who live in their communities.
I'm in agreement. What does Sherry have to say?
Hi, Sherry. Are we keeping you up?
No, I was just going to tell you about a comment I heard on a talk show. This guy works along the border and talks to the illegals, and he asked them what they thought of the amnesty, and they think it's terrible because they think it's going to cut their wages when more illegals come in.
Yep.
And they also admitted that they don't want to be citizens. They just want to work.
Right. So they're offering them a benefit that they don't want.
Yeah.
But
and
that way,
Mike,
they can stand in front of the cameras and say, we're putting them on the back of the line. But how many Americans have fallen for that? How many Americans will say to you, well, that's wonderful, they're going to be at the back of the line. The back of the line for what?
Well, it's a red herring, and the border is actually a bit of a red herring, too.
Yes, it is.
Because if you have... As you have pointed out, Mike, every state that has an international airport is a border state, and that is my real concern, is that if this amnesty passes, everyone in the whole wide world is going to know that chances are really good that they can come here if they can afford a plane ticket, and they can stay here unmolested and take anything they want. If they can get away with stealing benefits they aren't entitled to, they can work if they want, they can be good citizens or they can be bad, and no one's going to touch.
Right, and that's what the Obama administration has been doing. By saying we're not going to arrest an alien for violating immigration law unless they've been convicted of committing felonies in the United States by other law enforcement agencies, what we've basically done is provided a playbook for the terrorists, telling them that if you want to come to America, the smartest thing to do is to come in either under the visa waiver program, which, by the way, would be expanded under the amnesty program, or with a visa, and then stay. No one's going to look for you. As long as you don't get arrested and convicted by local law enforcement, you have absolutely nothing to worry about. So, I mean, really and truly, if you don't care about the minor legality of you know, being in violation of law, why bother coming here, you know, legally, when you can come here and violate whatever laws you want, as long as you don't, in addition to that, get arrested by law enforcement for committing serious felonies otherwise. Bizarre. And, you know, they're doing it also with the agriculture visas. And I've made this point. We're being told we don't have enough visas for agricultural workers. Well, Mexico has no numeric limitation, by the way. And it's supposed to take only one day to process a Mexican citizen's application for an agricultural visa. But let's say, for argument's sake, that they're right and we need to issue many more visas. Then what I argued, and I mentioned this to members of Congress, is that they need to hire many more immigration agents to police that system. Because if you admit agricultural workers into the United States and they fail to go to the farmer doesn't get the workers that he allegedly needs, but we get lots more illegal aliens. So again, the solution to the problem is enforcement. That was the reason the 86 amnesty failed at its mission, because there was no enforcement. Again, we're having no enforcement, so we wind up with more illegal aliens. So every step of the way, the real solution to the broken system that we're told about is that we don't enforce the law. And yet there's absolutely nothing in comprehensive reform that would provide more assets for the enforcement of the laws. So how in the world is this going to make the system work?
Well, and Mike, the other thing, and I mentioned this to you before, is that, you know, the problem is after you give amnesty, these children, you know, the dreamers or whoever, ask them, do you support future amnesties? I have yet to find anyone that says no. You know, so you're going to have even a smaller part of the population that believes in immigration law enforcement. And what does that mean? You know, your borders are less secure than ever. And then after the amnesty, you're going to have more people come in. And then, you know, the problem is expanding. It's not shrinking.
No, well, really what this is doing is turning America's borders into a speed bump.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, that's really what it is. And you know,
it's a border that means nothing.
Right. And if you look at this total emphasis on the border, and we heard this from Ted Cruz at the rally, and it seemed as though that all that Ted wants to talk about is the border. Well, that's fine, and I'm certainly in favor of securing the border. We have to. You know, I've compared the fence on the border or a secure border, however you want to define it, as being comparable to the wing on an airplane. Without the wing, the airplane's not going to fly, but a wing by itself goes nowhere. So we have a situation where any alien who is adequately tenacious can ultimately get in. You know, my usual riddle that I like to ask politicians, among others, is how many times does it take an illegal alien to run the border to get to the United States? And the answer is one more than the number of times they get stopped by the Border Patrol.
Exactly.
And once they're in, nobody looks for them, except maybe to give them employment authorization under an assumed identity. Now, how scary is that?
Yeah. Or they kill someone and they're caught.
Go ahead, Sheree.
I have a question about the Dreamers. You know, people are always focused on how they did nothing wrong. but they ignore what their parents did wrong. I'd like to know, if someone's going to vote to help the Dreamers, are they going to agree to punish the parents?
Well, you know,
know
it's
that
funny.
They won't. If
you're
the Dreamers get to
point.
Stay, they won't deport their parents.
You're raising an interesting point, by the way. You know, we keep hearing about how many children die in the desert because they're being smuggled into the United States. Now, in New York and around the country, how easy is it to get arrested if you're a parent who leaves a child in a car with the windows closed in this weather?
Right.
Okay.
If you leave a dog, if you leave an animal in a car, there was one just in Ohio.
Okay.
Right. She was arrested, booked, and her car was towed.
Okay. So
with
now,
with the dog.
And right. And by the way, and I agree with that. Okay. I'm completely in agreement. If you go speeding down the highway with a child in the car, you're going to get arrested. If you drive drunk in New York, there's a special law because a bunch of kids were killed by a woman driving them around and she was drunk out of her skull. So drive drunk with a child in the car, that's a special crime. Drive at high speed or recklessly with a child, and maybe the kid's not in a proper child seat. That's another criminal offense. So here's my question. Why is it that if an alien smuggles his or her child or someone else's kid across the desert, we don't charge them with the reckless endangerment of that child's life? What do you think of that idea?
Good question.
Well, in California, their car won't even be towed.
No, they'll probably wash it for free and give you an oil change while you're there. I mean, this is astonishing. But I really want to know, all joking aside, why is our government not prosecuting people who drag children through the desert when it's 120 degrees, subjecting them to the potential violence by the smugglers and the bandidos, the situation with the tarantulas and rattlesnakes? I mean, this is a tough part of the country. I've been there. It's a dangerous place to be. Why in the world are no people being prosecuted for endangering those children's lives? Shouldn't they
there's
be?
There's a real double standard in every way that they're treated. We're prosecuted for things that they're rewarded for.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, they're so careful when you get on an airplane, let me see your ID. And some people will say, can you pronounce your name and who are you? And we're so worried who's getting on the airplane. Why is nobody worried who's getting into the United States?
Makes no sense.
You know, Mike, it's more difficult for me to get in the Cleveland Zoo. I have to show one or two different IDs to get in the Cleveland Zoo. Now, does this make sense when these folks can cross illegally into our country, which, you know, it just seems to me is far more serious. I mean, in addition, you know, aren't we at war?
We are at war, but it seems as though we're at war with our own citizens, and that's what I find disturbing. You know, this guy Snowden, I think, belongs on the end of a rope, on the one hand. But on the other hand, I think he's calling attention to a very serious problem that we have in America. This hypocrisy of scrutinizing Americans in a fishing expedition, if you will, you know, as an agent. In order to pull up certain records on people, you had to get a subpoena. Well, you had to get a search warrant. And you had to have probable cause. You didn't just simply say, oh, I'm just going to go look and see what Steve Salvey's up to because he looks interesting. It didn't work. Well, it now turns out that our intelligence services are operating inside the country. You know, the CIA is not supposed to work inside the United States. Their charter prohibits them. Any intelligence gathering is supposed to be done by the FBI. So now we find out that the NSA has been snooping on our phone calls and all this other stuff. And I'm certainly pro-security. You know, I was an agent. I've arrested terrorists in my career. I understand the need for this. However, when every American faces the potential of scrutiny without any probable cause, I worry about how that could be abused. Shouldn't that give everybody cause for pause?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I was thinking that perhaps, you know, I think some of the people in federal law enforcement and security understand that what the president and the Congress has allowed to happen. And, you know, and entities like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and encouraging more easing of visas and all these other things. So the people who are dealing with the security aspect are panicking because they say, well, we see all these people coming into this country. We don't know really who they are. So therefore, we got to ramp up our security on everybody.
That might be it. But you know what I find remarkable, and this is where the conservatives, I think, get it wrong. They hate unions. It's the unions that represent the folks at Citizenship and Immigration Services and the Border Patrol and the enforcement personnel at ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who gave John Morton a vote of no confidence. They've gone public and said this is a travesty because, you know, I was an agent. And maybe because I was an agent, I know I'm far more keenly aware of these issues than most Americans. This stuff keeps me awake at night, folks. I make no bones about it. This is the stuff of your worst nightmares, that we have a population of tens of millions of illegal aliens who violated the law that's supposed to screen out people who are bad actors. It just took 19 terrorists to irrevocably change America and have such a profound impact on us. Think about that. And we have millions of people. Now, it's true that not every one of them is a terrorist or a criminal or looking to kill anybody. Let's say 95% of those millions are wonderful people who are desperate. Okay? Sympathetic situation. We can't afford to help everybody. They need to go home. But the point is, they're not criminals. But let's say 5%. Let's say 1% is. What's 1% of 30 million? Goodness.
Right. But, you know, Mike, what's concerning to me is that, so I was at two immigration-related events. One was called Global Cleveland, okay? The other one was put up by, and the name is somewhat similar, but totally different a group and with a totally different agenda, the Cleveland Jobs with Justice, okay? And the pro-amnesty. The issue of terrorism did not come up in either meeting with about a total of 10, 15 panelists. Terrorism came up one or two times, and you know what? They call that issue a red herring.
Yeah, I've heard that at congressional hearings. Yeah,
They are not concerned with security at all. That issue, security, it doesn't even come up. And if it comes up, they say, you know, it's a red herring thrown in by, you know, the conservatives or something like that. You know, don't pay attention to it. That's their position.
Yes, but if you look at the what you do is you direct them to the 9/11 Commission report and the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. I was before a hearing with Sheila Jackson Lee, and I like Sheila. She invited me to two hearings. She was, in fact, the member of Congress who invited me to testify back in March of 2002 as to how the two dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after 9/11. Think about that. That's stupefying. But here we were at this one hearing, and I started to create or discuss the nexus between immigration and terrorism, and she said, immigration isn't about terrorism. And I understand that she has her orientation, but again, if you go back to that section of law, Title 8, United States Code Section 1182, it talks about how terrorists are supposed to be kept out of the United States. So let's figure this out. You have an alien who runs the border because he or she knows that they could not come here legally. Well, could it not be possible that one of the reasons why they know they couldn't be admitted legally is because their names are known to the international intelligence community and law enforcement community as being terrorists? So somebody that enters covertly, sneaks in, is sneaking in for a reason. You know, here's the question that I'd love to ask any politician, and you may find this analogy worthwhile. Let's say for argument's sake, and God forbid it should happen, but let's say for argument's sake, you're trying to get some sleep one night, maybe it's a little bit too warm, whatever. So you go downstairs and you figure, you know what, I could go for a nice warm cup of tea, maybe that'll you know, calm me down so I can get a good night's sleep. And then, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I'll doze off. So you go downstairs to pour yourself your favorite herbal tea. And on your way to the kitchen, you hear noise in the living room, and you peek your head into the living room, and there's a half dozen people sitting in the living room having a conversation. The only problem is you didn't invite them in. You don't know who they are. And so now my question is simply this. Would you be contented to go into your kitchen, make believe nothing's going on in your living room, prepare that cup of tea, and go back upstairs to your bedroom and sip the tea and hope to sleep, fall asleep? Or do you think you might want to call the police?
Yeah, I'd be calling the police, at least.
Do you think?
I think so, Mike.
So, tell me, is that not analogous to the situation that we're in today?
Mm-hmm. Well, and Mike, this was the response. This is what one of the panelists said. He said to this group, and see, I had no ability to respond because I didn't have a microphone. They wouldn't give it to you.
Right.
The guy says, you know, the terrorism is issue. It's a red herring. And he says, how many terrorists do you know that have crossed the Rio Grande? That's pretty much a quote of what he said.
That's the problem. We don't know.
We don't know.
But
let me ask you another
waiting.
Question. All right. But here's another answer for that, too. Napolitano, who speaks out of both sides of her mouth, her ears, and her left nostril, has conceded that hundreds of American cities have been infested by the Mexican cartels. Most likely, they crossed that border, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Where are they?
Exactly.
So when
I
hear
you, some of them have been caught in Ohio.
They've been caught in New York. I've arrested them in New York, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Do you know
when
I was up? Let me tell you what. When I was at DEA intelligence, I decided one day that I was going to do an analysis of arrest statistics. I was there basically to help DEA's mission, and I thought, you know what? Turnabout is fair play. I'm working 16 hours a day. As we all did. I'm no hero. We all did the job, and we didn't get extra pay for it, by the way, folks. For those people who like to beat up on federal employees, my longest workday was 39 straight hours. And we all did this. It's what's necessary. Just like the folks in the military, you do what needs to be done, mission first. But I decided I was going to take a look at those arrest statistics. And by the time we got done crunching the numbers, because back then when you asked for arrest statistics, they didn't give you a spreadsheet. They gave you boxes with arrest records. I came to work about a week later, and I couldn't find my desk. There were boxes on my desk, under my desk, around my desk, on my chair. It was pretty funny. And as I'm standing there, some clerks were bringing in hand carts with still more boxes of more arrest records. It took me about 6 months with a calculator to tabulate all the numbers. When I got done, I was amazed. 60% of the people we were arresting in New York for drug trafficking were foreign-born, 30% nationally. These are huge numbers. So we hear this nonsense that the border is secure, they're not doing us any harm, they're doing the work Americans won't do. Don't believe it. It's a lie, and it's designed to satisfy the people that make the campaign contributions. Basically, this is legalized bribery.
Yeah. Well, the cartels had their own airstrip in Ohio for a while. So, you know, if that doesn't tell you there's a problem, you know,
I was watching Border Wars, and they had this very attractive DEA supervisor on, and she's down on the Mexican border, and she was all excited because they just found a new technique being used to smuggle drugs into the United States, people swallowing condoms or balloons containing cocaine or heroin. The issue is, though, that in New York, we first saw that when I first began my career as an inspector at Kennedy Airport in 1971. Which brings us back to my often-made point that Shereen talked about earlier. Any state with a seaport or an international airport is a border state. Think about the French connection, and I never even put this together. It's wonderful to sit here and have this conversation with both of you. You all remember the French connection. Do you remember the car that was brought in by ship?
No,
and it turned
I don't.
Out that the heroin was in the rocker panels of the car.
Yes.
So let's go back again. How is it that drugs were smuggled into New York? How far is New York from the Mexican border? Because every state is a border state, and that car came in by boat.
Yep.
So, you know, we have to keep on pushing back. And when they say things like that's not the case or it's a red herring, then you just hand them the sections of the 9/11 Commission report and ask them if they think that the 9/11 Commission was full of crap.
Right. Yeah, I just got an email from the town of Palm Beach in Florida, and they got a very astute police officer saw a boat dock there, no one on board, and he checked it out. He saw that the fishing poles, that one didn't have a reel on it and something else. The boat was dirty, long story short. Finally, somebody showed up for the boat, and the guy says, oh, I was out fishing, but the problem with the boat came back. Well, long story short, because these fishing poles, one didn't have any gear on it, the other one was missing a reel, knew something was wrong. It found about 650 pounds of marijuana in the coolers and in the on the boat.
Yep.
But the guy told the officer, "Oh, I was just fishing."
Yeah, fishing, and look what I caught.
Yeah.
Bales of marijuana. Look, and the other potential exists that a boat could go out from a marina with three so-called fishermen and come back with 20 fishermen. Who's going to notice?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So please understand this, folks. For those of you listening, understand the point. Seaport is a port of entry. It's the oldest port of entry. That used to be the only way of coming to the United States from overseas. It's still very active. If you look at Port Newark, and if you look at what goes on at New York, if you look at all of those ports of entry, seaports, airports, we are a country of 50 border states. America's survival is on the line. What they are doing with comprehensive reform is marching to the beat of the drum being pounded on by Alan Greenspan, who talked about the wonders of bringing in foreign workers to occupy vacant houses to help the banking industry. He talked about the need to lower the wage premiums. I love that term, wage premium, like in too much damn money, that the Americans with skills are earning, because he actually referred to Americans with skills as the privileged elite and said that the goal should be to greatly reduce inequality in wages. Now, if it's inequality based on race, religion, ethnicity, gender, I agree. But he was concerned about inequality based on skill. That, folks, is the American dream. Get an education, you make more money. But now Greenspan turns it around and says, maybe not. Let's bring folks in from other countries who won't be so picky about what we're going to pay them.
Well, don't you think maybe he's talking about inequality?
Wait a second. Wait a minute, Steve. Yeah, go ahead, Cherie.
Don't you think maybe he's talking about inequality with world wages? Because I see this as a leveling of the playing field, and our wages are way above most of the wages in the world. And
well, yeah,
to
that's
level
a great
them,
point.
Ours need to come down, and theirs need to rise up.
Well, he doesn't want theirs to rise up. He just wants ours to come down, because he was talking about wage premium. He didn't talk about increasing wages anywhere. It was about lowering wages. I participated in a debate at Columbia Law School a few years ago, and one of the students there said to me, globalism is inevitable. It's here. You're not going to get rid of it. How do you deal with it? And I said, I have an interesting idea. In fact, there had been a story, I believe it was on 60 Minutes, but I thought it was a novel idea. Because, you know, if unions were made to work properly and responsibly, I think they're good, within reason. Again, responsibly, reasonably, you know, that's what's been lacking from the debate every which way. I said, maybe the solution is a worldwide union that, just like in the federal government, takes locality pay into account. So, for example, if you're working for the federal government in Mississippi, you're not going to be paid as much as someone doing the same job in New York or Los Angeles, because the cost of living is lower. So perhaps what we really need to do is adjust for locale and have people coming to the United States making certain that they get the same pay that an American could expect to get. Now, understand the point. That's the way it's supposed to work now, but the way that the fraud gets played out, they game the system so that at the end of the day they hire the foreign workers and not the Americans. Now here we're talking about the high-tech workers.
Yeah. Mike, your father was in the trades, wasn't he?
I'm sorry?
Your father was in the trades, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a plumber.
Yeah.
Just like, well, Cherie's husband's a plumber.
Okay, there was the retired union guy. Actually, the head of the AFL-CIO was at one of these meetings. He wasn't the guy who told me, said this, but, you know, this guy, I was surprised the trades guy is supporting amnesty, but he's saying exactly what you just said, and that's why he believes amnesty is going to, you know, raise up everybody's wages. I don't see that happening.
No, I don't see it happening either, but I think he's been drinking the Kool-Aid that the AFL-CIO has been serving up. Interesting story.
Yeah.
When the administration said that we're going to have the stakeholders participate in the discussion, and I love that, the stakeholders didn't seem to include American citizens, the AFL-CIO rejected any effort to have the union members of ICE participate. Now, understand the American Federation of Government Employees is part of the AFL-CIO.
Yeah, yes.
Now, if you're really on the level, why would you not want the enforcement personnel to weigh in and provide their very unique and very worthwhile perspectives to the discussion? Because what unions are looking for, and that's why I said I believe in unions when they're fair and reasonable, they just want more members by hook or by crook because their numbers are declining. Because that gives them two things, Steve. It gives them money in form of dues, and it gives them political leverage as their membership goes up. So it's about money and power, just like Washington, and they don't really represent their members. They represent themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that at one of the meetings, I was allowed to ask one question, unfortunately no rebuttal opportunity, but and afterwards the union guy came up to me, and he was livid. There was fire in his eyes because I had the gall to bring up the issue of rule of law, if you can believe that.
Oh, I can absolutely believe that. I've seen that all the time. You know, I did a debate at SEIU. SEIU, as far as I'm concerned, goes way beyond what a union should do. They've even gotten involved in New York about the stop and frisk business. This is well beyond
they
what a union
too.
Should. I'm sorry?
They were
SEIU is
the service
employees union.
Yeah, yes. They were at the meeting.
Yes, and they are awful. They conduct themselves in a way that I really think of them as being subversive in their approach. And, you know, they were furious at me. Because this, again, is not about the well-being of their employees, but most of their employees blindly follow them. You know, I have a neighbor whose wife belongs to the American Federation of Teachers. And it's incredible to me, because we were talking about the election. I said, who do you plan to vote for? He says, I don't know. When my wife's union tells us who to vote for, then I'll know who I'm voting for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was ready to rip my hair out of my head.
Yeah, yep.
And by the way, I would love to see municipal unions operate under the Hatch Act or the equivalent thereof. Federal law prohibits any kind of electioneering or involvement in partisan work by the union. You're just not allowed to do it. If you do it, you go to jail. This is a serious set of laws. I believe that municipal workers are entitled to representation. People get angry with me, but I say no. Anybody can have unreasonable working conditions. And, you know, New York City Police Department is unionized. You know, if you're out there in an alleyway chasing a bad guy, engaging in a shootout, you better have somebody on your side in this crazy world. But they should not be allowed to be involved in the political process. That is a conflict of interest. Do you agree or disagree?
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? I think that you need to have someone who stands with you to make certain that your working conditions are just and fair. But they should not be involved in the political process, which all too often happens. So you have labor unions making deals with politicians, and the politicians provide things to the unions that drive their cities into bankruptcy. That needs to stop.
Right. Well, that never happened in Detroit, though.
No, but they're bankrupt anyway.
Well, yeah, I was saying that was sarcasm.
I understand that. I understand, and that was my response. I'm only semi awake after all my travels this week, but I'm still kind of conscious.
Mike, and hopefully Cherie's still there. I'll let Cherie end the show with you. I'm going to need to sign off in a minute.
Steve, you can have that union guy reach out to me. I'd be delighted to talk to him.
Okay, I tell you what. If he was younger, and I told a friend of mine, I think he would have hit me over the head with the shillelagh. But, yeah, he was, boy, I mean, he had certainly had passion, but... I'm glad I was not in the union hall at the moment, walking to my car after the end of it, though. But,
well, but if you encounter a situation like that, you can point them in my direction. I'll be glad to have that discussion with them.
Very good. I don't think you get very far with this individual, but you're more than happy to. Anyway, Mike and Cherie, it was wonderful talking with you, and have a good weekend, both of you.
You too, Steve.
To you,
stay
Steve.
Cool. And by the way, bye-bye. Thanks for being there in Washington.
Thank you, and likewise to you and Cherie.
And by the way, you got to still send me those photographs.
I will. I'll try to I'll resend
thing today or tomorrow. I'd like to post them on the website.
Great. Sure. Bye-bye.
All right, kiddo. Have a great weekend.
Bye, Steve.
Bye.
Cherie, you know, I mean, it's remarkable how the unions twist things sideways. You know, that's the whole problem. Who really represents the average American today, Cherie?
I know, but if you talk to the rank and file members, a lot of them are very upset with this amnesty thing. You know that Greg Serban, the director of iFire, is a Democrat and a union pipe fitter, right?
Yep,
He's very opposed to it.
I know.
And we have other Democrat members that are just as opposed to this amnesty. They know what's going on. And if you talk to carpenters on the street. They were having a protest around the corner from where we were having a protest.
Yep.
And
yep.
The Carpenters Union was very opposed to amnesty, too.
Yep.
So the rank-and-file workers know what's going on.
But now what has to happen is they have to start voting union delegates out and union officials out who are in favor of amnesty. Just as I started the program talking about what happened with Rolling Stone and Tsarnaev on the front page, the poster boy for, you know, whatever. We've got to go after the news media. We've got to go after the unions. We've got to take back America. That's
right.
Really what needs to happen. We had 3,000 people in Washington. You know, when the first New York Marathon was run, I think there were 50 participants. How many people now come from all over the world to run the marathon? Just thinking of yet another analogy.
Wow. It's a worldwide event. Yeah, it's huge now.
But it started with maybe 50 or 100 people. See, I am hoping that the sounds that came out of that park were the birth cry of a new American activism. That's what I hope.
I hope so, too. Well, you know what? It's a shame that in the United States of America, unity doesn't sell in the mainstream media. Because the D.C. March for Jobs should have gotten a lot more coverage than it got, because we brought people together, people of all races and all political persuasions.
Let me tell you, if there had been a brawl, if someone had shot or stabbed somebody, you would have made headlines.
I know, but then on the other hand, there was another march going on that was dividing people, and that's the one that's getting all the attention.
Look, this is about food fights. That's what it's about. They don't want the good news. Somebody getting a straight A average and doing a great job in school, that kid is not going to make the evening news. If some kid robs a store and shoots somebody, he'll get the front page. If it bleeds, it leads.
Well, I think you're right. I think this is the beginning of something good, a new partnership. Because the American
And you know what was
people...
so delightful? It was the black American, right? And meanwhile, how many white faces did you see in the audience? How many Hispanic faces did you see? I saw America in that crowd.
Right. I saw all different kinds of people.
That's right.
I saw America.
And those who want to claim that this is about racism, look at who was at that rally They were all American citizens from all over the place. I was from New York, you were from Indiana, there were people there from Texas, people there from California, from across the country. Black, Latino, white, Asian, you name it, they were there. And that, to me, Sheree, is American. Because we're not an all-white country. We are probably the most ethnically diverse country on the planet. So all these arguments about racism, we need to stand tall, stare down those imbeciles that say, and I do say imbeciles because they don't understand that they're destroying their own futures at the end of the day as well. They're doing harm to their own children at the end of the day as well. This isn't about keeping people out because they're the wrong color or the wrong this. So there is no such thing as wrong color. This is about keeping people out who, if they were permitted to come to the United States, would do harm to us. Just the way look through a peephole before you let a stranger in, that's what immigration is supposed to do, Sheree.
That, and I like to repeat our motto, which is, it's not about race, it's about numbers. I don't have anything against any race or any group of people, but we've got to allow immigrants to come in numbers that will not harm the American worker.
Right,
we have
this
to
comes
keep
back
that
again
in mind.
To not do harm. And, that, and it's all covered in Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. Folks, if you're listening, look it up. Go to my website, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. You tell me what's racist or unfair in that section of law, because that is the guiding section that is used to determine the admissibility of foreign nationals, a.k.a. aliens. And by the way, the word alien simply means any person who is not a citizen or a national. There is nothing discriminatory. There is nothing that constitutes hate speech in that definition. It is about providing clarity. And the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, know full well that with objective, honest discussions, they can't win. So what do? It's Orwellian. It's all about newspeak. It's about changing the vernacular to change the way people see things. Orwell said that if you eliminate the words from the vocabulary, you can eliminate the thoughts. That's the process that we are facing now, and we have to unite against this madness, because this really is undermining national security and the economic future of all of our citizens of this great nation. Sheree, you know, I'm looking at the clock. It's been a very quick, almost hour and a half.
Yes, really. Yeah, it's been great being on with you, Mike.
It's terrific being on with you. I appreciate you joining me on the show today. It was great for Steve to come on board. I'm going to try to see what we can do about getting Leah Durant on perhaps for next weekend and see what she's got cooking, because I hope that her organization really starts to gear up. And we the people need to be the force to be reckoned with. And I think we can do it. I really believe we can take back America.
Well, Leah's not stopping. She's pressing on. We've already gotten contacted by her. She's got big plans, and we're going to be there to help her. She's done a great job with this rally and with lighting a fire, and a good kind of fire, and we're going to carry the torch along with her.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, Sheree, it's always been delightful, because you and I have been working on this stuff for years. And,
you know, it's nice to get some reinforcements.
Isn't it, though? The cavalry is here. Well, I hope you and Tony and everybody at home are going to have a great weekend. Send my regards to him.
Tony says hi. And are you going to summarize the show now? Or?
Yes, I am. And you can stand by with me or not, depending on what your plans are.
Okay.
But what I hope that our audience takes away from today is that we did go to Washington. We did get our voices heard. There were members of the political establishment were there. Two of my favorites were there, Senator Jeff Sessions and, of course, my friend Steve King. Delightful to see him. And, you know, Sheree, I was in Prescott, Arizona, and I was with a member of Congress who I was super impressed with, a gentleman by the name of Paul Gosar. And he did something very unusual. He gave me his private cell phone number, and he gave me his private email address. What do you think of that?
Nice.
He's serious, and I sent him a bunch of my emails, and this afternoon I waited till about 4:30 or so, because I figured he's probably at the airport trying to get out of Dodge. So as I drove into Manhattan to pick my son up at school, I called Congressman Gosar, and we spoke for about 15 minutes on the phone, and he had conceded that he hadn't read through all of my material, but that he read through half of it and plans to try to get through the other half over the weekend. It was a wonderful conversation, and to sit down and speak with him as I did at Prescott after the event, it wasn't a photo op, it wasn't a, oh yes, Mr. Cutler, let's take a quick picture together. We sat down on the floor by the stage where we were for about a half hour and chatted. And what he's told me is that they hope that I will work with them as they go through this business known as comprehensive reform, because they recognize that it's a disaster. So I look forward to working with Congressman Gosar, Congressman Steve King, as I say, always my hero, Lou Barletta, who's an amazing guy. I've been working with Lou since he was the mayor of Hazleton, and he enacted the first local ordinances against illegal immigration, not out of xenophobia, but out of concerns that violent transnational gangs had set up shop in this town and were killing people. So, you know, you work with folks like that, and of course Chuck Grassley is another good guy. So there are people who are doing the right thing. Senator Vitter, another good guy. They are trying. And we, the people, have got to gravitate towards those members of both houses, irrespective of party. I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. What matters is where they stand on immigration and what they're willing to do to make certain that our borders get secured, that the immigration laws get enforced, and that no legislation gets passed that will undermine America's working families or America's national security. How's that for an interesting set of priorities?
That's great. We need more congressmen like them.
Absolutely. Well, Sheree, I thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay, young lady. I hope you all have a great weekend. And to those of you out there in radio land, as it were, I thank you for joining me this this Friday, hot Friday, July the 17th, I believe it is. And I look forward to seeing you all next week at the same time, same place. And meanwhile, folks, please take citizenship seriously. I always like to remind people that democracy is not a spectator sport. Go to my two websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, and we'll see you next week. Good night, Sheree.
Good night.
So long.